This is the Stella Culinary School Podcast, Episode 13, Sauce Espanol. Podcast found online at stellaculinary.com. My name is Jacob, and today is a very exciting episode because we are moving forward and progressing. We're finishing the five-part series on the French mother sauce, which lays the foundation. And I know we covered a lot of information, and so there's going to be a main page for all the mother sauce resources, but don't worry about that right now. All right, that's going to all be available online. You can go and take the quizzes. You can watch some upcoming videos that I have planned for you, and we'll talk more about that later. And you can view all the recipes plus their derivatives. But let's kind of focus just for a second on what we've accomplished over the last 12 to 13 episodes, right? Basic knife skills. Launched a whole video series based on that. So you can go and you can watch how you do professional knife skills in a commercial kitchen. Everything from butchering to breaking down vegetables and prepping properly. All right, we covered how to blanch and the science behind blanching, which is a very important step in making sure that you have all these great tools and techniques available for par cooking and cooking things properly. You learned the basic cooking techniques and the methodology for sauté, sear, pan roast. And now we've finished, with this episode included, the five French mother sauces, which is the basis to a huge amount of sauces out there. If you understand these five French mother sauces, then with a little bit of creativity and a little bit of inspiration, you're going to be able to make any number of great sauces and soups. So with that said, let's jump right into our discussion segment. And today, since we finished our starch discussion last episode, talking about the different thickeners, we're going to talk a little bit about Nouvelle Cuisine, or New Cuisine, and how it influenced sauce making and how there is that transition between the sauces of Escoffier's day and our modern day today. In today's discussion segment, we're going to talk about sort of almost the evolution of sauces. I'm not going to go too far into the history. We've already covered some of that. But I want you to grasp this concept of the evolution of cooking in general and the evolution of sauce making, right? So every time we discover something new, or someone comes up with a new recipe, or someone's extremely influential in the cooking field, they lay down a baseline, right? And it's a foundation, it's a building block for us to create upon and study further and take what we like and reject what we don't and build upon that and create our own name, our own style, our own voice, our own kind of cuisine. And nothing illustrates that better than the transition of sauces going back even before Escoffier's time. See, before Escoffier, there was a French chef named François Marin in the 18th century. And he was one of the founding fathers of French cuisine. He called his bouillon based, when bouillon is basically referring to stocks and broths, and he called his bouillon based cuisine, Nouvelle Cuisine or New Cuisine, Nouvelle meaning new. Now, in the 20th century, after the founding of the five French mother sauces by Escoffier, a new form of Nouvelle Cuisine or New Cuisine started to emerge by the younger chefs, by the apprentices who came up studying Escoffier and all of his peers. This nouvelle cuisine believed that lighter food were more friendly to the palate, more friendly to the taste, better on the stomach. They started lightening up their sauces by doing full reductions and using cream and butter as thickeners instead of the heavy starch thickeners like roux. Now that emerged into even a more lightening or a more intensifying of flavors. Right when I was cutting my teeth coming up in, you know, professional kitchens, the roux and the starch thickened sauces were on their way out. I mean, they had been on their way out for a long time among the top chefs, right, in the world. But it was becoming more and more common practice for the higher end restaurants, to do what are called full reductions, full flavor, full body, and they're reducing. We talked about this in our stock episode when we were talking about making veal stock and reducing that down into demi-glace. And this reduction process intensified flavors and at the same time lightened up the sauce. Because you don't have the addition of not only the roux, but also the cream and the butter. Except for maybe a little splash or maybe a pat of butter right at the end for mouthfeel. But specifically, you weren't using heavy cream to thicken a sauce through reduction. You're making, you know, taking your demi-glace or your veal reduction, and you're making a nice pan sauce with it. That's when all of Manuk came in, right? That's when the idea of reinforcing flavors on a consistent basis came in, an idea that was started by Escoffier, and you can see it especially in the technique segment today when we talk about, you know, sauce brown and how he makes demi-glace, and the entire process is about reinforcing flavors during that sauce-making process. But the modern chefs, right, and when I'm talking modern, I'm talking about, you know, the 70s and the 80s, and now there's been, you know, one or two revolutions since then, which we'll get into farther on down the road. But those modern chefs, so the 70s and the 80s, they were taking that reinforcing of flavors to the next level, right? Every single time a sauce was moved to a new pan or to a new pot for further reduction, it would be strained, it would be passed through a chinois to make sure that they were removing any particular elements that would affect the mouthfeel. And then they were adding in fresh mirepoix, roasted onions, roasted garlic, tomatoes, meat scraps, wine, juice. Some people even were juicing their mirepoix and adding their mirepoix juice and adding thyme and wine and reducing. And in modern fine dining restaurants, sometimes the most expensive thing on your plate is that intensely flavored sauce because, think about it, you're taking, you know, hundreds of pounds of veal bones, and you're extracting out all that flavor, and you're discarding those bones. And then every time you go and you reduce it, you're reinforcing it with fresh aromatics, fresh herbs, fresh vegetables. And it's a long, drawn-out reduction process. I mean, Marco Pierre White, a fantastically eccentric chef in Europe, who's since retired and is kind of just living the good life. But in his book, he describes how at one of his restaurants, they would literally roast 36 chickens each day just for their juices. They would take these roasted chickens and smash them through a colander, and the chicken would be discarded, and all that would be left is the juices. And the juices of those 36 chickens, after they were reduced down and made into sauce, would be enough to sauce 30 individual servings of his chicken dish. And that just shows some of the extremes that within that sort of modern revolution, right, in the 70s and 80s, when people were refining the sort of the techniques and the sauces and the mother sauces and making them making those sauces their own, they were going to extremes of flavor extraction, making it really opulent by sparing no expense. Because still, to this day, like we've talked about before, one of the main reasons why you go into any restaurant, but especially a fine dining restaurant, is their sauce. It's very easy with a little bit of practice and an accurate thermometer to cook a piece of meat mid-rare, right? It's the love and the technique that goes into the sauce that's served on top of that meat, which will really elevate and separate your cuisine and also give you your own unique voice in this cooking space. Now, what also happened too is they started doing a la minute sauces, which means at the last minute. And I actually have shot a video on this to showcase this technique, but it really isn't all that difficult, right? It's just understanding the process of making it. But what would happen is, you know, say you're making a roasted duck breast, right? Now, obviously, if you're going through all the steps and doing things properly, and we're talking on a purely a commercial level, if you're serving a duck breast in your restaurant, you shouldn't be ordering in the duck breast just by itself. You should be ordering in the whole duck. So you go through, you butcher down the duck, you trim up the breast, use the duck to make, or the duck bones to make a nice duck stock that you reinforce with a nice aromatics every time you go and reduce it. And you're going to basically make a duck demi-glace by reinforcing and reducing that down to at least a half to a quarter of its original volume. So now you have this concentrated duck stock. Now the customer orders a duck breast, right? So you go and you score the skin and you pan roast it and you finish it in the oven. Now when you pull that pan out of the oven and you remove the duck to allow it to rest, you're going to use that pan and the residual fat and the residual flavor from the meat juices that were released during the cooking process to make your pan sauce a la minute, right? And then now a lot of times, even that is being taken to the next level where there are some restaurants that use veal breasts instead of veal bones because they don't want a bunch of collagen in their veal sauce or in their veal stock. Because collagen has its own mouthfeel, right? So they want that, they want to be able to reduce the veal stock down to a really strong, powerful flavor. But when it's devoid of the collagen, which thickens it, which veal breast doesn't contain much collagen, what you're going to get is a really intense veal flavor without that sticky, gooey mouthfeel in your mouth. And so they'll use that for their pan sauce. A little, you know, deglaze, a little bit of red wine, a little bit of the veal breast jus or the duck jus, reduce it down, and finish it with some butter. Now, I am being sort of vague because, number one, we do have a video on this, and number two, we're going to talk more about finishing off your pan sauce in the culinary quick tip. But as you can see, the progression of sauces from Escoffier's very heavy-handed sauces back at the beginning of the 20th century, which set the base or the foundation for our understanding of modern sauces, we've then expanded on those, and chefs have taken the reins and the control and have done some quite amazing things with it. And that's why it was so important for me to do this series on the five French mother sauces, because I strongly believe that without this fundamental and foundational understanding, you're going to have a harder time conceptualizing your own sauces and finding your own unique voice. All right, so it's time for our final French mother sauce. And yes, I did save the best for last because, I mean, how else are you supposed to do it? That's how you rock, you know what I mean? And this is sort of, actually, there is another reason. Because unlike no other, right, sauce espagnole, and its derivative, demi-glace, has influenced such a huge majority of sauces, especially the sauces utilized in a professional kitchen, from just the standard demi-glace or the reductions, you know, like the thyme wine reductions, to the pan sauces, to jellies and aspics. So it's really played a large role. And before we could really cover it in full detail, you know, we had to talk about how to make the other sauces and typical sauce making processes and, you know, the effect that roux and different starches has and different thickeners have on the consistency of the final product. So now that you have this firm foundation set, let's talk about sauce espagnole, also known as brown sauce. And to make sauce espagnole, first you're going to need good quality veal stock. And the only way to get good quality veal stock is to make it yourself. I mean, sure, there's probably a restaurant that's going to sell it to you, but I mean, that's, you know, that's going to be really expensive, first of all. And it's hard to find a chef that's going to, you know, part ways with his homemade veal stock just because it's such a pain in the butt to do it correctly. That once you have it, you know, you want to use every last bit. It's really not worth it for me to sell you pure veal stock because it's a pain in the butt to make properly. But regardless, you can use this same process with roasted chicken stock or roasted pork stock, roasted turkey stock with what, you know, when you have the Thanksgiving turkey left over. So you don't have to do it specifically with veal or veal stock, but that is the classic way. And still to this day, the main sauce that is used in, or the main stock that is used to make a predominant amount of the sauces in a professional kitchen is still veal stock. So because you start with a great, well-made veal stock, sauce espagnole, or sauce brown, is really relatively simple, all right? So to make 1 quart of sauce espagnole, you're going to need your mirepoix, which is 4 ounces of onions, 2 ounces of celery, and 2 ounces of carrots. And you're going to need some roux. In this case, to yield 1 quart, 2 ounces of butter and 2 ounces of flour. Now, don't go and, you know, start scrambling to write this stuff down. It'll all be on stellacolony.com in the episode 13 show notes. But I'm just going to give you this so you can kind of visualize the sort of ratios that you're using, all right? So you got your mirepoix, you got your butter and your flour for your roux. And you're going to need 1.5 quarts of roasted veal stock, 2 ounces of tomato puree, and then your basic aromatic sachet, which is about 1 bay leaf, 2 to 3 sprigs of thyme, 2 to 3 sprigs of parsley. And you can overindulge a little bit. Now you're going to start by roasting your mirepoix at the bottom of your sauce pot with the butter. And this roasting process, the roasting of the mirepoix, is step one in reinforcing flavors, right? You're caramelizing the natural sugars in the mirepoix. They're going to start to release their aroma. The more you caramelize them, the more sugar they're going to release. And they're going to start to give off a color, which is going to not only reinforce the flavor of your stock, because, you know, caramelized vegetables taste yummy and have that nice roasted quality, but it's also going to reinforce the color of your stock and your finished sauce. Now, once your mirepoix is nice, dark, and golden brown, you want to sprinkle in your flour. This is the farinier technique that we talked about in last episode. And this will be the base for your roux. Using your wooden spoon, you're going to stir, 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 stir. You're going to roast, 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 roast. Singing the roasting song, roast, 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 roast. Just old shout out to culinary friends. And you're going to roast that flour and make that dark roux, right? Dark golden brown roux. Now, once you've created that roux using the butter, flour, and the mirepoix that's been roasted down, you're going to add in your stock. And just go and stir in your stock. If it's a veal stock that's heavily, that has a good amount of dissolved gelatin in it, you might want to bring it up to temperature a little bit. And, you know, bring it just medium heat so it's nice and fluid. And you can stir that in to your roux base. And you're going to gently bring it up to a simmer. And you're going to start the skimming process. From there, you're going to add in your tomato paste and your sachet. And you're going to continue to cook and skim over low to medium low heat. Now, you want to simmer on low for about 2 hours. And you want to pull it halfway off the burner. And then skim constantly. Okay, and you're going to do this for, you know, another 15 minutes for a total cooking time of, say, 2 to 2.5 hours. Now, you want to strain this through a chinois and reserve, and this is actually going to be your sauce brown or your sauce espagnole. So, basically, sauce espagnole or sauce brown is a roasted veal stock that's reinforced with a mirepoix and a little bit of a brown roux for color, and for thickness. Now, Escoffier's version tells you to strain it into a clean pot 3 times during the simmering process, and each time adding in the same amount of stock that has evaporated out. Towards the end of the cooking process, he'll add the fresh tomatoes. But, you know, if you're using tomato paste in the first place, then it doesn't really matter because they've already been cooked to all hell. So that's just, you know, that's Escoffier's way of doing it. Also, another thing you might want to add into the process, just as a variation, is add the tomato paste up front right after you've made the roux. And the reason why you don't want to add it before you add the flour is because tomato paste contains a lot of moisture, so you're probably not going to be able to caramelize and brown the flour properly. But after that process is done and you have a nice dark brown roux with those the mirepoix in there, you can add in your tomato paste over high heat and stir it around and start roasting that tomato paste and get a caramelization on that. It's going to give you more color, more of a roasted flavor, and a little bit more of a sweetness to your stock or your sauce, because what happens is obviously when you roast something, the sugars start to caramelize and they become a little bit more sweet. Not exactly rocket science, is it, this whole cooking thing? Now, that can be used as a sauce itself, but normally it's used as a base, right? And the most common thing that this base is used for, that sauce brown is used for, is demi-glace. Now, the next step into demi-glace is actually really simple, right? Demi-glace, a traditional demi-glace, by the way, is one part brown sauce, one part brown stock, and combined, gently simmered, and reduced by half. All right, so I mean, I know that's hard to grasp, so let's go over it again. One part brown sauce, like Espanol that we just made, one part brown stock, as in roasted veal stock. You combine them together, bring it to a simmer, and reduce by half. You're going to skim, skim, skim. Now, to throw in a modern twist, you could always add in some more roasted vegetables and some more fresh aromatics, maybe some red wine, maybe a couple bunches of thyme or some parsley or some bay leaves, you know, something to reinforce that flavor. As it reduces down, it's just going to give you a more flavorful end product. Now, the two most famous derivative sauces off of this, off of demi-glace, is going to be Bordelaise and Sauce Robert. So for Sauce Bordelaise, you're going to use 1 cup of red wine, 2 ounces of chopped shallots, which is about, you know, 2 large shallots, maybe 3, some fresh cracked black peppercorns, a couple sprigs of fresh thyme, 1 bay leaf, and you're going to combine and reduce them in a heavy bottom sauce pot. Now, once this is reduced by half, you're going to add in 1 quart of your demi-glace and simmer for about 15 to 20 minutes. And you're going to give it, you know, the whole time you're going to skim if any of that scum comes to the top. And you're going to strain it through a chinois or a fine mesh strainer. After it's been strained, you want to finish with about 2 ounces of raw butter. Just swirl it in, maybe hit it with a little whisk. And that's it. Sauce Bordelaise is traditionally garnished by diced bone marrow, which is going to add just an extra little bit of beefy richness to it. Love that bone marrow. And you normally you'll poach it in salt water and pull it out and the whole deal. And it, you know, goes great with steaks, pretty much anything heavy. You know, I mean, Sauce Bordelaise is a pretty rich sauce, especially with the addition of bone marrow. So I'd definitely recommend serving it with beef or strongly flavored game that can hold up to such a heavy sauce. The second one is Sauce Robert, which is fairly simple. All you want to do with that is just sweat about 4 ounces of onions in some butter for 10 to 15 minutes or until they become soft and tender, sort of translucent. Deglaze those onions with 1 cup of dry white wine and reduce by 2/3. Add in your quart of demi-glace, simmer for about 15 to 20 minutes, and strain. Finish with 2 teaspoons of dry mustard, a pinch of sugar, squeezed lemon juice, and check the seasoning for final salt content. And that's it. So what I want you to really focus on, though, is this final sauce that we call demi-glace. Because this, moving forward, when we talk about making pan sauces and doing whole completed dishes, where you're pan roasting something and doing a pan sauce, or making a pre-made sauce like a Sauce Robert or something that you can use to sauce during a banquet or a large party, for the most part, they're going to be demi-glace based. And you'll notice, though, that with my traditional demi-glace or my untraditional demi-glace, I don't ever use a roux to thicken it, right? I'll just reinforce with flavors all the way down the line. So you know how we talked about in the stock segment, talking about the remillage, that second pull. A lot of the times, I'll combine my remillage, my veal stock, and I'll reduce those down. And each time I combine them together and I reduce them by about, you know, a quarter to a half, I'm going to add in more fresh mirepoix, whether it's fresh or whether I roast it, some more fresh aromatics, and keep on reducing it down until the dissolved collagen, which is now gelatin, naturally thickens my sauce. And then I'll use that as my base to make sauces like sauce Robert, or to make, more commonly is what I make is pan sauces a la minute, which we're going to get into that when we launch the whole video series on making sauces and soup. So look out for that soon because it'll be launched within the next few weeks. So in today's episode, we're going to skip right ahead to the culinary quick tip because we have covered so much information. And I figure, hey, you know, just like any cool teacher, I'm going to let school out early today because you guys have really hung in there with me over the last five episodes. So we're going to jump right into the pan sauce making process. And this is more than just for flavor balance. Now that we've set the stage, now that we have some basics under our belts, what you're going to be hearing me lecture a lot on and just kind of throwing in there because it's a huge part of what I do is flavor structure and balance. And if you've ever worked for me, you know that I just pummel you in the head constantly with flavor structure, flavor structure, flavor structure. That's unbalanced. That's unbalanced. That's unbalanced. The job of a chef is, bottom line, to produce things that taste good. It's as simple as that. Well, you got to make money doing it too, right? So let me refrain. You got to produce things that taste good and make money, right? If you're doing that, if you're working as a professional chef, right? You got to make a profit. You got to pay your bills. And the way that you do that is through understanding proper flavor structure. So your first lesson in flavor structure is going to be talking about the three components to finishing a pan sauce. Now, these three components are fat, acid, and seasoning, and they're done in that order. So first the fat. Why do you add the fat? Right. So let's go back to the discussion segment when we were talking about, you know, making that pan sauce a la minute. So you've taken your roasted duck breast out of the oven. You have that pan with a little bit of the duck fat in it, some juices that were naturally released from the breast during the roasting process. Now what do you do with it? Well, normally, with duck breast in particular, you're going to have a lot of fat in the bottom of the pan, right? So you're going to want to pour some of that off, just in general, okay? If you're roasting a filet, you probably wouldn't have that much fat in the bottom of your pan. Now, if you were roasting a filet and you didn't have enough fat from the filet to actually cover the bottom of your pan, add a little bit more in. Add some canola oil, add some clarified butter. And my first step is to reinforce, right? Because I'm going to do a reduction, a pan reduction. So just like in the demi-glace that we talked about and also the sauce espagnole, we're going to reinforce, right? So I have that nice fat, and it's nice when you have a duck breast like – or when you have an animal like duck, and that duck breast, it releases its own fat because it's going to have its own unique flavor. And to that fat, I'm going to add some sort of aromatic. My personal preference that I always have on my hotline is thinly sliced shallots because they have that nice – you know, sweetness of an onion, little tiny hint of pungent garlic without that overbearing bite. And when they roast up and caramelize, they're absolutely beautiful. Right, so I'm going to throw in the shallots. I'm going to toss around the fat. I'm going to get them nice and roasty, roasty toasty. Sprinkle a little bit of salt. And that salt is going to help to draw out that natural moisture, evaporate out the moisture, and then caramelize the shallots once that moisture starts to leave. Once those shallots are caramelized, now caramelizing is an optional step too. So maybe you want more of a raw bite, so just don't cook them as long. You're going to normally deglaze, and here is when you come in with the alcohol, right? It can be white wine, red wine, brandy, cognac, Armagnac, whatever you want to use, right? Whatever flavor structure and profile you're looking for. And you're going to hit it, right? Probably about 2 to 3 ounces, maybe a little bit more depending upon the size of your pan and your serving size. And you want to be careful because it's going to flame up and you're going to get a nice big pan explosion, especially if you're using a high-proof alcohol like a brandy or a cognac. So, you know, take it off the flame, throw in a little, you know, a few ounces of alcohol and put it back on the flame. It's going to flame up, so don't freak out. But be careful. Make sure that there's nothing, you know, hanging in the way of it. And then you're going to kind of swirl that around, maybe take a little bit of a wooden spatula or a wooden spoon and scrape off any nummies that were stuck to the bottom of the pan during the roasting process. And those little nummies are going to release their flavor and reinforce, there's that key word again, reinforce the flavor of your sauce. Once you reduce that by about half, now it's time to add your base stock. So in this case, best case scenario would be to use duck stock, right? Because you're making a pan sauce for duck. If I was making this for a filet mignon, I would use veal stock. If I was making it for roasted pork, honestly, I'd probably use veal stock too, just because that's what I have lying around. But if you have a nice roasted pork stock, that'll work too. And this is going to be your version of demi-glace, whether it's chicken demi-glace or, you know, veal demi-glace. It's going to be that reduced, reinforced sauce that is your base that's ready to go. And, you know, during dinner service, we keep this hot on the back of the stove. Going to add in those couple of ounces, usually reduce that by half until the sauce becomes nice and thick, what we call nappe, which means it coats the back of a spoon. So you stick the spoon in, it becomes, you know, thick, but you want a nice thin coating, because if you take it too far, like we talked about before, that mouthfeel of having just a bunch of gelatin in there can really, you know, coat your palate and deaden a lot of flavor. So you don't want to take it so far to where you have that sort of that smacking mouthfeel of the gelatin in there. Now, once you have it to that final stage where you like that consistency, which is the nappe, then you're going to swirl in your fat, right? Finishing component number one, fat. Normally, it's butter. Almost always, it's butter. Sometimes people like to add a couple drops of cream. You know, you can swirl in animal fat. But butter is what I normally use. And you want to use a good, high-quality, always unsalted butter. You never, ever, 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 just to be clear, ever, use salted butter. Why? Because you're a chef. You season your own food. You don't let your butter do the seasoning for you. You're adding butter for a different reason. It's not for salt content. So you add in your fat, you add in your butter, and you're going to swirl that around, okay? And you want to do this over low heat, maybe no heat at all if you have a lot of retention or retained heat within the sauce. And what you're going to notice is it's going to slightly lighten the color of your sauce, but also the fat that emulsifies into the sauce is going to thicken it. Now, if you were to leave this on a high flame and let the butter melt in, then the fat would not emulsify, it would break apart, and it would float on top, and you'd have a greasy sauce. No bueno, okay? You want to swirl in that butter over low heat. Now, as soon as you're done swirling that in, you want to give it a taste. One thing you'll notice, you're going to have a nice, rich mouthfeel because you have the gelatin from the concentrated stock, and you have the fat from the butter, and it gives you this nice, beautiful, velvety mouthfeel, but it will deaden some of the flavors because fat naturally coats the palate, so it will deaden some flavors. So you want to balance that. You want to cut through the fat, and the way that you cut through the fat is by adding acid, and acid could be in any form, whether vinegar, right, and you want to add, you know, a nice aged sherry vinegar, maybe a nice champagne vinegar. Those are kind of my two go-to vinegars for finishing a pan sauce. Or sauce-specific, you can add in a red wine vinegar, balsamic vinegar. They even have flavored vinegars like, you know, thyme vinegar, apricot vinegar, honeydew vinegar, cucumber vinegar. So all sorts of different things can be your acid component. But also, too, very traditionally speaking, citrus. And one of my favorite acid components in a sauce is just a little tiny squeeze of lemon juice, just a couple of drops. And this is for a veal pan sauce. And people associate, oh, you know, lemon is, you know, kind of a clear juice and, you know, it's good for fish. But they don't really associate that with beef or veal or a heavy sauce. But you'd be surprised how much a nice acidic lemon and a little bit squeeze of that juice can brighten up your sauce. Lime also works. A little bit of orange. Orange would be great in the duck pan sauce. But sometimes orange isn't acidic enough. So you want to do a little mixture. Maybe a couple of drops of lemon juice, and then a little bit more orange juice so that orange flavor permeates out. Because the thing with your acid is you want it to be a very subtle underlying flavor. Its purpose is not to make your sauce taste like lemon or sherry vinegar or balsamic vinegar. Its purpose is to cut through the fat from the butter and allow the flavors from your veal sauce to be more available to the palate. Now, the final step or the third component is seasoning, right? Which salt is more important because salt balances acid and also balances sweetness. So if you have, say, a bunch of roasted vegetables in your veal stock, maybe your veal demi-glace is tasting just a slight bit on the sweet side, even though there's no sugar in it, you can balance that by cutting through it with acid, because acid and sugar, they balance one another. I mean, think of a classic lemonade. But also acid and salt balance one another. So you cut through with the acid, boom, cut through. And you're going to season with a little bit of salt to bring everything back into balance, because maybe your demi-glace was perfectly seasoned before you added it into your pan, but by the time you finish with your butter and then you add in your acid to cut through that butter, now all of a sudden you need to do a final seasoning step, which salt is number one and most important. Pepper, again, I'm not going to go on this rant because pepper is a flavoring, not a seasoning, but if you want a black pepper or a white pepper hint, finish with a little bit of fresh, cracked, white or black pepper in your sauce right at the end, okay? So the oils are nice and fresh in the sauce, and they really permeate. And this is also your chance for some last-minute flavor infusions, adding in some minced fresh thyme or some chiffonade basil or some nice fresh mint or maybe some fried rosemary. And this will be your final step. And literally, if you're doing a final flavor infusion where you're adding in fresh herbs with the seasoning component, it's going to be salt, herbs, swirl, 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 taste to make sure you've adjusted it right, boom, it hits the plate. That's it, it's out, it's gone. That's how you want to rock it. So if you remember this process, right, and these three components, and you always do it in this order, you'll be making great pan sauces every single time. Fat, acid, seasoning. That's it. That's your pan sauce. And that's it. Salt, herbs, swirl, 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 taste to make sure you've adjusted it right, boom, it hits the plate. That's it. It's out. It's gone. That's how you want to rock it. So if you remember this process, right, and these three components, and you always do it in this order, you'll be making great pan sauces every single time. Fat, acid, seasoning. That's it. That's your pan sauce. And that's it for this episode of the Stella Culinary School Podcast. Thank you once again for joining me, and congratulations on finishing the 5-part series on the mother sauces. Next up, we're going to do a full series on basic garmanger, the cold side.